All right, goddammit, let's get down to business. No more bullshitting. Let's get down to brass tacks. And the phrase get down to brass tacks is of murky origin. Some say it alludes to the brass tacks under fine upholstery. Others say it's Cockney rhyming slang for hard facts. So, hell, I don't know. And I'm still not totally feeling 100%, but fuck it. I'm going to act like I'm feeling good. Like Richard Nixon, I'm tan, rested, and ready. Which is how they described Richard Nixon after he took a vacation from politics and returned in 1968. And actually, well, I'm fairly rested, sleeping a little better. Yes, I guess I'm ready. But dude, I am so not tan. I've always been fairly pale. You can actually set the white balance on a camera by pointing the lens at my skin. I mean, I make Nosferatu look like George Hamilton. Does anyone understand that reference? Well, let's unpack it. Okay, first off, I have no interest in seeing Robert Eggers' new film version of Nosferatu with Pennywise himself from It, Bill Skarsgård, the vapid Lily Rose Depp, daughter of Johnny Megapint Depp. It's also got William Dafoe. It's a loose remake of F.W. Murnau's 1922 film Nosferatu, A Symphony of Horror, with a creepy as shit Max Schreck as Count Orlok. You gotta look him up. I've always been partial to the Werner Herzog 1979 version Nosferatu the Vampire with Mr. Crazy-Ass himself, Klaus Kinski, as Count Dracula. But yeah, back to Robert Eggers and his new version. First off, it's too fucking long. Plus, I watched a few minutes of his first film, The Witch, from 2015. I thought it was boring as fuck. The Lighthouse from 2019 also just looked like way too arty for my tastes. Again, Robert Eggers seems to be pretty meticulous in his preparation, but his movies look like airless and joyless to me, self-satisfied and zero fun. So fuck it, I don't have to watch everything. I used to like try and see most notable movies. These days I'm like, dude, I'd rather watch a 1991 made-for-TV movie. More on that later. Okay, man, I got sidetracked. Okay, back to the Nosferatu-George Hamilton comparison here. George Hamilton, while not the best actor, had a charisma about him, and he was famously always super tan. And get this, watch how I tie this together. George Hamilton played Count Dracula in the ridiculously stupid but fun film Love at First Bite from 1979. George Hamilton also played Zorro, the famous swordsman, and his flamboyant twin Ramon in the 1989 film entitled I Shit You Not. Well, it wasn't entitled I Shit You Not, but I shit you not, it was called Zorro the Gay Blade. Because Zorro's, like, you know, twin Ramon was kind of flamboyant and stuff. It's like, man, can you believe that title? I remember seeing the film in the theaters with my dad when I was young as shit, and George Hamilton used to absolutely crack my dad up. I vaguely remember one scene where, like, my dad was the only one laughing out loud in the theater. So, okay, now that we all know who George Hamilton is, I think we can get into the usual. Some movies, a lot of bullshitting, and some dime store philosophy.
You are my density. You are my density.
Okay, quick addendum to my talk on horoscopes last week. I said those horoscopes can be, you know, pretty spot on and accurate. But I should have said that horoscopes can be right until they are completely wrong. It's like every once in a while you have a horoscope that you feel is so way off. It's like, all right, let me check out my horoscope for today. It says you have a small penis. You have little to no sexual charisma. Your name is Mark, and yes, you spell it with a C, and it's like, wait a minute, this must be some kind of misprint. Or you guys mixed up the horoscopes or something. I mean, this is completely inaccurate. Excuse me, sir, where do I report a misprint? Look, man, I don't have a small dick. I swear. Look, I'll show you. Okay, I go. Here it comes. No? You believe me? Okay, then. Are you sure? Okay. Okay, briefly, we must mention the legend David Lynch, who recently died from emphysema at age 78, a lifelong smoker and notorious coffee lover. Man, he was just an authentically weird, one-of-a-kind artist. He had, like, a great energy. He loved diners and Americana, but he gravitated towards our kind of darker impulses underneath it all, kind of like the famous opening scene in 1986's Blue Velvet, where the camera pans into a quintessential American lawn in a small town, and under the lawn are like a bunch of crazy-ass ants and shit just like going crazy underneath. I've always loved Blue Velvet. It's the perfect mix of reality and also like weird shit to me without tipping into the completely wacky world that some of Lynch's later movies like went to. And I'll never forget seeing his pretty good film Wild at Heart from 1990. I saw it in the theater with Nicolas Cage doing his best Elvis impersonation. God, do you remember that weird ass period where Nicolas Cage and Lisa Marie Presley were married? And she was married even more bizarrely to Michael Jackson before that, although I think that was just kind of a sham. I remember reading Nicolas Cage went and checked out the bathroom, which is notoriously off limits at Graceland because Elvis actually died in the bathroom. And if you ever do visit Graceland, it's right above where you like entered from the front door. It's on the second floor, like above you. But anyway, Wild at Heart is kind of a campy crime romance. Also with a totally great Laura Dern, who I've always loved, William Dafoe is our villain. It's a fun ride with some Wizard of Oz influence in there. But I'll never forget it because Nicolas Cage smokes a ton of Marlboro Reds in the movie. And it looks so cool to me, and the smoking looks so pleasurable. So of course, me being a dumbass at the time, I was like, hey, why don't I start smoking? I was underage at the time, and this one liquor store would sell me cigarettes, so I had maybe a pack-a-day habit smoking Marlboro Reds for maybe 5 or 6 months. Evil fucking things cigarettes are. But let me tell you, there was nothing like that first-in-the-morning cigarette with coffee. Holy shit, so David Lynch, I understand why you loved it so much. We won't go into an exhaustive review of his movies, but check out the previously mentioned Lost Highway from 1997, if only to see the absolutely freakiest shit Robert Blake in one of the most genius casting selections ever. 2001's Mulholland Drive is considered his masterpiece with just a shockingly good Naomi Watts in a dark Hollywood masturbation fever dream. Man, it's kind of bleak. Totally worth watching with a weird scene in the parking lot of a diner with a scary-ass character living next to a dumpster. You gotta see that. It's shot so well. But, you know, I'll always have a sweet spot for Blue Velvet. But, yeah, David Lynch was creative as shit. He did art. He did video projects, books. The dude kept busy. And it just sounded like he was kind of a genuinely likable, interested, interesting, and inspiring dude. I read a quote from him once. He said, "I saw life in extreme close-ups." Which I totally can relate to. As I said, life to me is like a movie with wide shots, close-ups, and pans. And life, at its best, is vibrant and exciting and a close-up. So rest in peace, good sir. Oh, yeah, and I forgot to mention his classic TV show, Twin Peaks. Man, I dug it. I mean, who killed Laura Palmer? Agent Dale Cooper, the log lady, Bob. So classic. A mix of the normal and the absolute fantastical. My favorite memory is of my mom getting freaked out by this little short guy who would dance weirdly. Lynch had the actor say the lines backwards, then ran the footage forwards. So the words and the motions and stuff were intelligible, but just had a totally unreal creepiness to him. My mom stopped watching the show after that. It creeped her out so much. All right, another edition of some random movie quotes I came up with. Often after I've had a couple drinks, though I am cutting back, I will come up with a couple of like Jack Nicholson-style quotes. Okay, on this first one, picture Jack Nicholson talking to a friend right after bowling a strike. "You know, sometimes I even impress myself." Or another one, maybe a somewhat rumpled-looking Jack Nicholson is doing a job interview and he says, "You know, I've always considered myself a people person." And one more. This is kind of corny, but this is one is for maybe like a later in life Jack Nicholson romance film where he finds love and he says, "You know, I'm starting to remember what happiness feels like." Okay, a couple more and fuck it. I'll just keep saying them in a Jack Nicholson style. This one isn't really that good, but what the hell? I don't even think it makes sense. But anyway, "I'm so out of the loop that there's no loop at all. It's just like straight. Okay, and finally, I kind of like this one. What's your story? Just in like one or two lines. I don't have a lot of time, and frankly, I'm not that interested. Okay, that's it for this week's episode of Shit I Made Up. All right, well, I mentioned I'd rather watch a 1991 made-for-TV movie than the new Nosferatu, so that's just what I did. 1991, Sometimes They Come Back, is a made-for-TV adaptation of a Stephen King short story. Tim Matheson, with an absolutely fantastic head of hair, is a teacher who's returning with his family to the hometown he grew up in, forever haunted by the killing of his younger brother years back by some local hoodlums who themselves perished in a train accident. So some of Tim Matheson's students start dying, and with each student that dies, each one of these teenagers that killed his brother transfer into his class. Are they ghosts? I mean, other people can see them, so who knows? But these villains return and are hell-bent on wreaking havoc on Tim Matheson and his family. One of the hoodlums is played by Robert Russler, a good-looking but not great actor who was also in the original Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984, which also had a young Johnny Depp in it. Sometimes They Come Back as kind of low-budget, but it just has a great vibe, innocent vibe. It's corny, some bad effects, but strangely touching, and I always liked Tim Matheson. It's cheesy, but it's fun. It's not dour or serious or overwrought. It's just a goofy B-movie, totally worth watching. So at my work in Palo Alto, people know I love Los Angeles, and once in a while someone will say, hey, I'm visiting Los Angeles in a few weeks or whatever. And I'm like, oh, cool, where are you going? And they'll be like, Anaheim. I'm like, Anaheim? Or they'll say Irvine or some shit. I'm like, that's not L.A., goddammit. This may only make sense to me, but to qualify as Los Angeles in my mind, wherever you are has to be 30 minutes, maybe 45 minutes from being able to see the Hollywood sign. You know, without a lot of traffic, obviously. And I do have something brewing right now that might helpfully get me back to Los Angeles to stay. I'm hopeful, but I will get down there one way or the other sooner or later. You know, life can be rough sometimes or often, but I always, you know, hope something good is around the corner. I have to. And in L.A., you never know what's around the corner. It may be someone asking you for money or a woman with a child in a stroller, or it might be Dwayne The Rock Johnson. And actually, I would rather run across some director or casting agent I used to know, and maybe they would say, like, oh, you're back in town. Let's keep in touch. I mean, anything can happen in Los Angeles. I do know what's around the corner in Sunnyvale. Boredom. I mean, when I do get down to L.A., who knows? Maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be okay. But it's always an adventure living down there. And if nothing else, I'm either, you know, kind of ballsy or just kind of an idiot. I mean, I have a great job in Palo Alto, but man, I'm just not happy here. And I've been moving a lot over the years, and I'm pretty sick of it. It's generally been job-related, but whatever else, if I'm not content just sticking around somewhere, I won't, like, stick it out. If I know I'm not happy or doing well, I try to get the fuck out of there. I mean, my job in Los Angeles will certainly pay less than my Northern Californian job. Nurses make much more here. They always have. But money isn't everything in the long run. Yeah, maybe I can have to buy a few less supplements or whatever. And it's not like I'll be Mr. Happy Guy in L.A. I'm just not that guy. But I know I'll be happier. And I don't know how my story ends. I hope for the best. I hope to meet someone. I hope to quell this never-ending drive to keep moving and searching for something and going somewhere else and just settle down for good in Los Angeles. And I may end up self-destructing as so many people do at some point in Los Angeles, but man, I'd rather do that in L.A. L.A. is paradoxically the land of promise, peril, reinvention, and self-destruction. It's a city of superlatives, good and bad, the highest highs and the lowest lows. But it's got so much potential. So that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. And I will end with a quote from David L. Ulan, a writer and professor, I think he teaches at UCLA in Los Angeles. He has a great book called Sidewalking, Coming to Terms with Los Angeles from 2015. He said recently in an article I read, to paraphrase, he said, there's a tension that drives the city. It's an impossible place that is itself full of possibility. Great quote, sir. And again, it describes Los Angeles pretty well, but also life in general. I mean, it can be impossible to bear occasionally, but somehow we go on. hoping for that next great thing to happen.